And welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 24th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Well, welcome home, Mr. Gibson. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Yeah, I made it back in one piece, safe and sound. You know, when you take a plane, you take your life in your hands, or basically somebody else's hands. But I'm good. Everything's fine.
Well, that was a fairly eloquent description of travel, but I think it's we can move on to some travel and baseballs.
A lot of travel's going on in baseball, including someone we've got on this week's show, which is Chris Carter of the Cebu Lions, who's back. And then we're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani, who's batted fifth and pitched against the Hiroshima Carp for the Fighters the other day.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about a lot more and answer some great listener questions. The bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, the season is about halfway through, but if you live in the United States and would like to see the CL pennant race play out in the second half, go to oneworldsports.com and find out how to watch Giants games live.
All right, well, I went out to Cebu Dome yesterday, Saturday afternoon, before the Oryx Cebu game, and had the great, great pleasure of seeing Chris Carter again, whom we hadn't seen since last autumn.
Yep.
When he was released by Cebu. Now, Chris had came to the Lions with some bad knees. He had had surgery, and he was, he said he was just getting to know him.
He was meeting up with him, introducing himself.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. He said they didn't feel like his knees. He didn't feel like himself, and pretty much at the end of the season, that's the way it was. And so that led to him hitting very well in limited playing time,
mm-hmm.
getting a couple of big hits and being a real fan favorite. He's a big, smiling, affable fella, and you just wish him well. But it wasn't enough to, that goodwill wasn't enough to keep him around.
No, yeah. I remember Kevin Hodges in the interview that you did with him mm-hmm. in the offseason. Saying that he just wasn't healthy enough, and that was my impression. I looked at him. I didn't like the way he was moving, even though he was playing and he was sometimes in the starting lineup. I just didn't like what I saw.
Yeah, he was limping when he was sitting down.
Now that's pretty difficult to do.
Well, I think he was used to it. So anyway, we met Chris Carter. Now the Lions, it was a whirlwind romance, if one could call baseball contracts romantic. They signed him on Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
and they put him in the starting, I think it was Wednesday, it could have been Tuesday, excuse me. They signed him during the week, and they put him in the starting lineup on Friday, the first game back after Interleague.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who is a Lions fan posted a picture of the starting lineup on his Facebook page and went, Carter! So anyway, we talked about his unusual circumstances mm-hmm. and what it means to be coming back to the Lions. So why don't we have a listen to what Chris has to say.
Welcome back not only to NPB, but the Lions and to the Japanese Baseball Weekly podcast. First of all, so many things have gone on in the past year, not only for you, but for Japanese baseball, with all the changes and so on. You were saying about how you thought you're out of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us, our listeners, a little bit about how that happened when you were released and how you happened to stay on in Japan.
I had a horrible injury, and I never really recovered with my knee.
Okay.
And at the end of the year, the Lions weren't sure about my health. And so I went into the off season pretty much with the same question from all of the NPB teams: how is your health? And we're not confident about your health. So I kind of asked around. I didn't want to really go play independent ball in the United States, and I wasn't sure about the minor leagues. And so I got a job. I got what most people do. I got a job and started working.
It's an alien concept for some people.
Right. I just I just thought that's what I should do. And I took the first job that was offered to me. I said, let's do this. And then I got a call from my agent, and he said, hey, I want to actually, I got a couple calls from Italian baseball go player there. I said no. And then I got a call from my agent, and he said, I want to propose something to you.
Okay.
And I said, okay, well, I'm listening. And he said, well, you know, all these teams think you're a great hitter, but they're really not sure about your health.
Right.
Then they don't know if you can play.
Mm-hmm.
So how about we do this? How about we get a Japanese independent ball team to sign you? You show that you're healthy. You're here in Japan. And who knows? Maybe it'll work out. And I said, no. You know, like, my wife's pregnant. I want to stay home. I got a decent job, you know.
What were you doing?
I was working for a business consulting, but I was doing sales. I was doing lower end sales, working on platforms and things like that. So I was working 12 hours a day, and I don't know. I didn't love it, but I felt like that's what I should be doing. And then after a month and a half, my wife told me, you should take that job in independent baseball. You should go for it. And she said, you're not done playing. Sorry, I'm getting emotional. She said, you're not done playing baseball. You're a great player. And this isn't it. I want our baby to see you play. And so I took the job. I called him back and said, is he still open? He said, absolutely. So I took the job. And 2 months later, I'm here.
What a good story.
Well, I didn't know if it would happen, but I had a good wife, right?
Yeah, I did.
It worked out well.
Yeah.
So
I'm interested about that, you know, that switch from doing a job that you should have been doing. is there as a baseball player, and you went to Stanford, where I mean, most people aren't baseball players. And I guess your what did your dad do?
He's a doctor. Right now he is a teacher at he's teaching at Heald College, and he also does internet classes where he teaches for nurse technicians and things like that.
Okay, so you come out of this situation where people aren't baseball players.
Yeah.
And then is there a conflict always in the back of your mind that this is you're fortunate or you're sort of
to play baseball?
Yeah. That somehow it's not normal.
This is the best job in the world. I mean, there's some ups and downs, there's some stress, but it's the highs are so high. It's I love baseball, and I'm sure people can have a lot of fun in their job, but for me, it's baseball. I can't imagine any other job being more fun.
So your wife was pretty intuitive in that respect.
I think she knew I wasn't happy too.
Okay.
You know? I mean, she didn't say it. She said it in a better way that kind of motivated me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think she knew I wasn't happy.
Okay, well, John wanted to know, John says hi,
yeah.
And he wants to know, what was your take on the ball this year? Because you were sort of watching it from afar, and you could obviously, if you're watching what's going on in the games or even looking at a few games, you can see the difference.
I'm really happy. I'm really happy as a hitter. Hopefully, you know, I get to experience it firsthand in these games.
Right.
But when everyone's telling me the ball is going 10 feet farther.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that'll be a huge difference from a warning track flyout to, you know, over the fence. And I think it'll change the game. And I like it. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of pitchers that disagree with me, but I like it.
So now when you're coming back to this team, now you're sort of, you had a whole cultural adjustment last year.
Mm-hmm.
You're joining the Lions. You were with them from the start, but you came up in the middle because of your knees.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're coming back in the middle. How's that feel to be like thrown into the middle of a pennant race?
I didn't know what to expect. They took me in like I never left, and so I don't know why. My experience here has been nothing like it was in the MLB in the States.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more accepted in Japan. And I don't know if it's because that... I don't know. I think they just know I want to win really bad and that I really appreciate being here. And I think they love that about a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And they know I'm very humble and I will do anything for this team. And I think we just, you know, we support each other.
Yeah, well, when the news was announced that they had signed you this past week, some of the team executives said that releasing you was a very, very painful decision for them. But that's an easy thing to say in retrospect, but I guess it was true since they were very eager to bring you back.
Yeah, and how they scouted me was very thorough, too. I had several different scouts, and even the general manager come to the game to watch to make sure that not only my health was good, but, you know, my skills as well. So they're very thorough in signing me back, and I know they have a lot of choices, and I know that there's a lot of great players out there, and I'm very happy to be back.
How are your knees?
I would say they're almost 100%. I'm trying to get to the – I mean, it's been 9 months of rehab, so it's pretty good. But I want to get to the health condition of being able to play outfield again.
Right.
And so I'm not quite there yet to play in the NPB. But that's my goal. So maybe in a couple months I'm back to that level. But I can DH every day. I can play first base. But as far as playing the outfield, I'm not quite there yet.
Well, this is a tough outfield to crack.
Right, right. And it's also playing on turf, which is more difficult on the joints that most people know. So I got to be extra in better condition than I was playing on grass in the United States.
Okay. Well, how was playing in? How long were you with the in the independent league here?
Two months.
Oh, that's not very long. Now, how was your experience there?
You know, some of the best teammates I've been with, and you know, we would drag the fields, and we were in charge of a lot of things, and there was a lot of things that we just didn't have the maintenance crew, we didn't have the funds, and we still worked just as hard. And so it was a good experience. It was definitely kind of a gut check, kind of created more determination, more motivation just to get through that experience, because it was the travel was difficult, but my teammates were great. So there's a nice balance.
Craig Brazil had a similar experience, although his was in the States.
Yeah.
And, well, I think he's back in independent ball now.
Wow.
But when the Lions released him because of an injury about 5 years ago, you said a gut check, and he said it was sort of a refresher course in going back to the basics of baseball and being, you know, with a bunch of people who were really hungry just to be playing and happy to be playing.
Absolutely. I haven't experienced that. I mean, I take that back. I experience here every day with the Lions. I experience in the major league. But it's different when you don't have the luxuries that you become accustomed to it in the higher levels of professional baseball. And you just see people want it so bad that they will not complain, that they will get through any experience because they want to get to a certain level and they have a dream. And it's inspiring for sure, and it's a pleasure to be around that. And it's here too, but in some ways that you don't have to experience that challenge here in the nice luxuries of the Cebu Lions or the Red Sox or the Mets. You have to be in a difficult environment to really test you, and that's what you kind of experience in independent ball.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week, and it's great to have you back and to see you back here.
My pleasure.
All right, man.
All right. Thanks for the chat, Chris. It was such a pleasure to see you, and hopefully we will be seeing you not only a lot more this year, but in the years to come.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chris.
Okay. So what did you take out of our very brief and somewhat noisy chat in the back of the room behind the Lions dugout there?
Yeah, the room was a little bit noisy, but you guys were real quiet, and I don't know how Chris was moved during the interview. I don't know what he did, if tears started to...
No, I didn't.
He started to leak. Okay, he wasn't leaking? All right.
No, he was... I didn't detect that. In fact, I didn't even notice he said that until when I listened to the interview again.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, I have to say it was a really good interview. Thank you very much. You did a good job. And I was shocked that he took a job outside of baseball. That's, I mean, there are three things that struck me, and that was number one. I mean, he didn't take a job as a coach or a scout or something like that. He's working in a totally different field. And again, I thought he had the talent to play, at least the hitting talent. Like I said, I don't think I got a fair view of what he could do on the field because I didn't see him playing healthy.
Right.
Or healthy enough to play defense. We just saw him pinch hit and DH here and there. We didn't really get to see him in the field, so I kept thinking, well, this guy can hit. What else can he do?
Right.
But, yeah, the talent to play baseball, I think, is there, and at least teach it. But I guess when you have a child on the way, that kind of changes your perspective, you know, about life and everything.
Yeah, it kind of struck me a little. The first thing that struck me offhand is, you know, times are tight, and Chris had to take the first job that somebody offered to him.
Yeah.
I'm going, well, the times are tight, but, you know, it's good to have circles of acquaintances, and it's good to have those kind of skills that people want to tap into. I guess going to Stanford baseball wasn't the only thing you learned at Stanford.
Yeah, he's a Stanford guy. So I also thought the two other things where he said, hey, you know, this story about how he got back into baseball, you know, everything, I just could imagine it, you know, and I could imagine him working a job that he really wasn't into mentally, and he said he was working 12 hours, 14 hours.
12 hours a day.
That's taxing, and if you're really not that into it, it becomes more of a chore and a labor than it is a job, and it's very arduous to go through those things. So it's for his wife to encourage him to go back to the game is just a beautiful story. And then he said, you know, he's got the greatest job in the world. And, you know, those statements stand out for me more than anything else he said. I mean, geez, you're working on the field as an independent contractor. So
they could use some independent contractors out on that field at Cebu. It looks like they missed some of the carpet squares the last time they fixed the outfield.
Yeah, but a big shout out to his wife for getting him back here, and I'm sure the Lions and their fans of Chris Carter that he made last year in particular are really, really thrilled that he's back. And I know he had a role in today's 9-9 tie, today being Sunday, the 9-9 tie with Oryx. So, yeah, it was good. It was good stuff. I was really moved. I was touched.
Well, it is a good story. And, you know, this was Friday. I originally had other plans for Saturday. But as soon as I saw he's in the lineup, I thought, man, this is such a great story on so many different levels. Chris is a very, he's a very eloquent guy. And you get the impression, you know, that he has such a balanced approach, and he's such a level-headed fellow and the reason I say that is when he says, you know, they could have given this job. There's so many other people who can really play baseball well that they could have given this job to. How often do you hear that? It's so often, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that. I mean, and I don't mean to be rude, but, you know, if you're a baseball player, you have to be focused on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because the second you're not, then you're an announcer talking about what other people are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're out of the game, or you're on the bench, or even worse. So, yeah. Right. Yeah, I agree.
But he's got a tremendous perspective. And the other thing about being out of work is I've met so many players whose careers were rescued in peculiar fashion. And I'm thinking of Katsuhiko Miyagi, a former Lion who was released suddenly when he was still a very good hitter. I have no idea what the story was behind that. But here's a guy who had been a pitcher. He failed as a pitcher for a kind of peculiar reason. His motion was illegal. Uh-huh. And he never could quite get around that. And they made him an outfielder. And by the time he learned to be a really good hitter, he got hurt, and they released him. And now here's a guy who's, since he's been a kid, his only idea of work was going to the ball field every day, swinging a bat, running, practicing.
Right.
And now they said, okay, you're out of here. I mean, you're out of the park, you're out of the game, you're out of the business. Go find something else to do.
And he works in sales. I mean.
Well, in the case of Katsuhiko Miyagi, he had no idea even where to start. He didn't know what does it mean to, like, look for a job.
Yeah.
So he was rescued. Now he's with the SoftBank organization, which signed him to a tryout. That signed him because he was on, it's a long story, but, you know, the point is, so many guys have no clue what they're going to do until they don't know, to be honest, they don't really understand how good they've got it until it's gone.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true.
So he got the big bounce into independent Japanese baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I did also like the fact that, you know, what he said about dragging the infield and doing all the little things, and, you know, I guess it's basically going back to high school baseball, so to speak, because you have to do it all. The kids in the States, at least, for sure, they take care of the field. They water it down. They drag the field. They put all the equipment away. They pull up the bags. You know, they put them in the equipment room and lock the door. And it's not just about practice. You know, you got to get there early before practice. You're going to stay late after practice just doing menial work.
Right.
And that's part of it. That's part of the responsibility. You don't have people to do those things for you. And then when you get to the big time up on the first team, then you have the opportunity to sit back and concentrate on just what you're supposed to do and focus on your hitting or your pitching or your opponents and get ready for that. So, yeah.
Well, see, so that's one thing. And the other thing is it piqued my interest is because this is becoming a big route now. I just happened to be watching the a few days old Western League game between the Tigers and Carp. It was on maybe a 2 week old game. Tonight it was on cable when nothing else was going on. And well, there's Zarate, who was, he's on the Tigers minor league roster, I think, as a developmental player. And he came out of the independent leagues, and Alex Maestri came out of the independent leagues. And as I mentioned to Chris, that Craig Brazell has had his career rescued out of the U.S. independent minor leagues.
Back in Japan with the Lotte Marines.
Yep, that happened moments after I talked to Chris. You know, I said, oh, he's still in the independent leagues, you know. Little did I know. So, and it's hard to realize now how many regular players are coming out of the independent leagues in Japan. I mean, you could think of last year's Pacific League batting champion. But another guy, which had a...
Kakunaka,
Katsuya Kakunaka, the Marines. Another guy who's a pretty good player is a Kensuke Uchimura of the Bay Stars. He was a pretty good player when he was with the Eagles. He's a pretty good player. He's the everyday player with the Bay Stars. And he was a guy who was an independent leaguer signed to, you know, drafted in the developmental draft. So this is, that's an interesting story that these guys, you know, that this extra tier is sort of building up organically.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you don't think about it so much, and we don't talk about it so much. We don't point to these players as much as we probably should. So maybe in the future I'll make mention of the guys who signed out of the independent league or at least spent some time there, and we can focus on some of those guys. Because, yeah, of course, when Bobby Valentine was here, he wanted to get these tiers going and develop them even more and get more focus on these tiers, even though a lot of them, the biggest independent league, what is it?
Shikoku League is
the one out in the middle of nowhere, where all they really have in terms of professional sports would be these independent leagues. So it has a chance, like you said, to grow organically and to become part of the culture out there. And for those people to see the players that they rooted for actually make something of themselves in the in Nippon professional baseball is quite thrilling, I think. You know, it's the same attitude you have back home with the minor league teams. You know these guys are going to come and go. You want them to win, but you know that winning means that somebody's going to leave, like, most likely. And it makes you it grows the backbone, I think, for these teams.
I think it does. I think it's he said it was refreshing. Craig Brazell told me the same thing. He said it was like going back when baseball as a game was important.
Yeah.
You know, it was like going back to why he played baseball in the first place.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I think that's really important. It's about guys trying to get, you know, what you take for granted.
Yeah. Now, one man's gain is another man's loss. And in this case, it was Jose Ortiz, who just didn't really put it together this season. I mean, he had his chance.
Sure.
He just didn't hit very well at all. And he's more of a bat guy than anything else. I mean, they played him at first. They played him at DH. He just didn't really produce, and he got released this week, and then here we go with Chris Carter. So, but I'm looking at the Lions team, and I'm thinking, as a whole, this team kind of overachieved most of the first half, in my opinion, if you look at the numbers, too. But
I think so. I mean, they, well, you know, they had that fabulous start by their shortstop, Kaneko.
Right. After he didn't start, I mean, he didn't start the season when Nagai started the season.
He didn't start the season at shortstop. I think he was in the outfield.
He played in lots of positions and then.
But he had that, you know, he just got that rocket start. You know, he just had, you know, wings on his feet.
Right.
And, he took things by storm and it's been kind of weird. You know, they put Asamura in spite of that, it's a fun season for the Lions, unless you're a Lions fan, because, you know, it's painful. But it's been fun because, you know, they put Asamura in the cleanup spot, and it was like, it's like when they did that with Nakajima. Oh, I'm in the cleanup spot. That means I should hit 50 points higher and start hitting line drives.
And do some damage out there. He was cranking. Yeah. I mean, he was raking. Yeah.
He is. And, come on, Kuriyama's Kuriyama, and, some of their guys have been hitting very well, and, of course, Jose Ortiz was their cleanup batter on opening day.
Yep.
And, that's because Ryan Spielberg wasn't ready. And, I'd give you even money that, Jose Ortiz finishes the season playing in Japan.
All right. I think I'll take that.
Okay.
But, you know, you look at them and they're still 3 games over 500.
Okay. 5 teams in the Pacific League are over 500.
Well, I mean, like I said, the feasting period called Interleague, where the Pacific League goes and feasts on Central League teams, is over now. But still, you know, they're 3 games over 500. And you think about the middle of the infield, they've had so much movement there with Nagai playing, Kaneko, he's gone now. Asamura had his time at short, and they've all been unsteady. Every single one of those guys, maybe Nagai played the position probably the best. He just didn't hit enough. And you think about the number of first basemen they've had. You look at the overall team, and the defense on the infield has just been shaky. And still, they're doing okay.
They have their days when they look like, guys go out in the field and they say, kind of thought I was certain I was going to be the DH today. Like,
I wish I'd taken some infield. But, you know, I think part of the reason that they've overachieved, or that I think they've overachieved, that's my opinion, is that the starting pitching is, it's young. It's a young pitching staff or young rotation, but it's been great, especially with Yusei Kikuchi coming on strong the way he has. But can these young guys prove through the dog days, again, of summer and then in the late months when they haven't done this and they've been, the fatigue sets in and, they have to go through the second half. So that's where I'm worried about them. But they fell out of third place into fourth place today in the standings, which is still not a big deal. But I think with Chris Carter and his addition, if he's going to hit, the lack of power, you know, they were last in home runs in the Pacific League with 36. They've had injuries to deal with. You know, they're probably above where they should be. I mean, they lead the Pacific League in stolen bases and ERA. And those two things, I guess, are helping them. Obviously, I shouldn't say I guess. They're obviously helping them stay where they are.
Well, they do have a lot of team speed, which is going to help you in those,
exactly.
help you in narrow games when you have to squeak out a run.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess, they've done the opposite of what, Micah Hoffpower said, you know, sometimes they hit and they don't pitch, and sometimes they pitch when they don't hit, and sometimes they do both. Sometimes they hit when they pitch.
Yeah.
To the fighters, it's the other way around.
Right. They don't do either. That was a great quote. But yeah, they're low. Yeah, hopefully Chris Carter can add to their home run title, but that's, you know, they need a dynamic presence in that lineup. And Asamura obviously did a good job, and has been doing a good job all season with the bat, but they need a quality dynamic presence in that lineup.
Yeah, if you're not good enough to outscore your opponents, then basically you need really, really good timing. You know, you just have to have the runs, you know, you need to score 2 runs when you allow one.
Hey, it sounds like you're talking about luck to me.
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, it's good to have Chris back, and we'll watch out for those Lions and see how they do with the new bats. Now I want to talk about the Shohei Ohtani game that I wasn't able to follow, but I want to say thanks to David. He is a listener who lives on the West Coast in the United States, and he sent me links every day when I was in the States to follow the games on the internet. And most of the time I was too sleepy to watch. I couldn't get up, and I woke up early a couple times and caught the end of games. And this was one of the games that I caught the end of, the Ohtani game where he batted fifth and was the starting pitcher. So I'm going to need your help on this one, obviously, but it looks like it was a really interesting game.
It was a fun game. It was a little scary if you're a fan of Ohtani's pitching because he had just horrible control.
Which makes sense, and that's something that Brian Wolf talked about. Because they don't let him pitch enough, he's only pitching X number of times a week or a month, that he's going to struggle at times, and this was obviously a time where he struggled.
Well, one of the reasons they picked this game, it was that they're basically their schedule. They tend to look at games. So far, they've looked at games where they were expecting to face left-handed pitchers.
Okay.
And of course, specifically, Grissom doesn't matter the left-handed pitcher to him, but it basically he's the right-handed hitter in the fighter's platoon, the left-handed hitter in the fighter's platoon outfield, and they have another fellow who comes on when he's not playing. So they shift him in there when they don't think they're going to need him in the lineup.
Uh-huh.
And with the Carp, it was, of course, a case of having a right-handed pitcher facing a right-handed pitcher.
Uh-huh. Yep. But I was a starter.
And they gave him another, because the situation wasn't right for him, they gave him a tune-up game against the Giants minor leaguers, and I think he struck out 13 batters.
Yeah, I did see that.
So they went, okay.
He's ready.
Yeah, he's ready. Well,
not so much. Yeah, he worked four innings. He allowed three runs on four hits with three walks, and he hit a batter.
His first inning was quite good, and then he spent the top of the second inning on the bases doing what Yankees owner Hank Steinbrenner said should be outlawed in baseball, because running the bases is dangerous.
You could injure yourself out there just running around.
Yeah, what's wrong with the National League having their pitchers run the bases? Are they stupid?
Guys in their 20s should not be doing something so dangerous.
That's right. Well, I think if you're Hank Steinbrenner and you're not familiar with the concept of running, that might be true.
Wow. So, unless it's after food, but we won't get into that. Okay.
Or away from the tax man or something. I don't know. So, any case, he was out. He doubled, which is something he does a lot.
He's doing a lot of that.
He does a lot. He's second on although he's batted. He doesn't have a lot of at bats, but he's second on the fighters in doubles. Yang Zhong Sho has 13. Ohtani has 12. More than half his hits are doubles.
Yeah.
And, basically, he doubled, and he was at third base, and he took off for home on an attempted suicide squeeze that was fouled. And he got a fair amount of running in, but he didn't get the typical warming up on the sidelines that Japanese pitchers have a few months to enjoy before it's outlawed for next season.
Uh-huh.
And the announcers made a point of that. But, you know, Central League pitchers don't always get to do that either. You know, if they're out running the bases, they don't get to warm up on the sideline.
Exactly. This is nothing new to the game.
I know. So, anyway, they're making a big deal about it like it was some sort of...
a new ball or something.
Exactly. Yeah. like somebody's trying to pull a fastball on the fighters. Don't warm it up. And they were saying, maybe you can sneak in a couple of warm-up balls, you know, throws on the side before he takes the mound. I'm going, what? Get over it. So anyway, it came out like this was prophetic, because it didn't take long for one of his pitches to end up in the seats. And then his game started to unravel. The first two guys get on in the second inning. The first two guys get on in the third inning. The first two guys get on in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. Johnny Kuroki probably saw the mound, more of the mound that day than he's seen all season. The fighter's pitching coach.
Yeah, you again?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what
did I do this time?
Exactly. What am I out here for? Well, you tell me. Okay. So it was not a great start. And he had enough to go five innings, he would have got the win. But it was a fun game. And as far as you know, I'm in favor of Ohtani doing both as long as he can succeed at both. And right now, you know, his credentials as a hitter just grow. I mean, never mind he went to, I think, 0-for-4 today, but his credentials as a hitter, the things he's done in a very limited trial are very rare. I would say his ability as an 18-year-old hitter is much rarer than an 18-year-old who can throw 152 kilometer, I'm mixing my,
mixing your meters per hour with your
exactly
miles per hour with your see you're mixing me up
per hour. Yeah, he sits about 91 miles per hour with his fastball, and he's got pretty good command of it. I think the number of 18-year-olds who can do that far outnumber the number of 18-year-olds who can swing the bat as well as he can.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this is going to be really interesting. It just gets more interesting.
Yeah, he's still 1-0. He's still undefeated, but his ERA is 5.14. That's kind of high. He only struck out 3 batters. He walked 3, and like we said, he walked 3 and hit a guy. So, yeah, too many base runners. Like I said, I didn't get to see it. I saw a couple highlights here and there, but the team eventually won the game, which is important as well. And he contributed on that end as well, knocking in a run. So I mean, you know, he's given the value I thought would make him a more of an impact player than Sugano because he's contributing more than once a week, like I said, and these hits, the hitting, while it's surprising me, I don't think it's surprising the fighters. I think they're treating him like they're starting right fielder.
I think that is the case too. Impact wise, yeah. Well, of course, the thing with the problem is that if you're going to pitch him, basically he's a 3-time a week outfielder, provided they face 3 right-handed pitchers on the days when he can play.
Yeah.
So it's a very tricky arrangement, but it's still fun. I'm really enjoying it. I want to see how far they can take this. You know.
Yeah, me too. I didn't get to see much of Sunday's game. We've installed a new system at the office, and it's very time consuming. And I didn't have time before to watch very much, and I have even less now. But I tried. I did see one of his at bats.
Well, he hits the ball very hard when he's not fooled. He's fooled a lot. I mean, he's struck out, I think, 23 or 24 times. He has more strikeouts than hits, I think. But he strikes out a lot, but he has a very nice swing, and when he makes contact, he hits the ball pretty hard. I mean, his double in the Carp game wasn't outstanding. It was a smash down the first base line that Brad Eldred might have gotten to, and Brad Eldred played an interesting part in that game by, after getting hit with a pitch, he looked askance at being hit by this dilettante pitcher outfielder, I think. And, you know, he played, you know, kind of a hard-nosed baseball going down to second base to break up a double play. And while the ball was rolling one way and the fighter's shortstop was rolling another way, two runs scored on the play. So, and it was sort of like, you know, this is what's in store. It's what baseball is all about, man.
That's right.
So,
dislodging and dismembering, right? At second base.
Yeah, so, well.
And home plate.
That's right.
And Matt Merton crashed into Takajo today. Matt Merton of the Tigers.
Did he?
He had another home plate collision. This one actually, Takajo gave him part of the plate and then took it away when he got the ball. He was going to give him the left part of the plate. He was on the first base side of the plate and gave him about a couple fingers worth of home plate, and then when he caught the ball, he just covered it up. But he had the ball, so.
Okay. And Matt gave him his
right shoulder.
He put a little support behind his philosophical discussion of how catchers should block the plate.
Exactly. Exactly.
Put a little weight behind that argument.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about quickly the Interleague MVP. It was Yuya Hasegawa of the SoftBank Hawks.
Right.
And he, I don't know that they got this right. I gotta be honest.
You don't know?
Well, I don't think they got it right. Yeah, I don't think they got it right. But Hasegawa had the highest average in Interleague. He batted 418 in 24 games.
He had the highest batting average in Interleague history.
In Interleague history, was it?
Yep.
I did not know that. So anyway, when you're out of the country, you just see a name flash up in the headline, and you're like, what? And then you just go on about your business. But he knocked in 18 runs. His OPS, though, was right about at 1,000,
mm-hmm.
and he struck out 19 times.
Right.
And, yeah, stole 5 bases, blah, blah, blah.
But blah, blah, blah is right.
Go ahead.
He's the third best hitter on the Hawks during Interleague. He was easily the third best. You know, there weren't a lot of guys worse than him.
No.
But basically the voters, the people who decide these things went, wow, 400. He hit 400. We've got a winner.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a winner, but they're losers. I think Seiichi Uchikawa, who had an OPS over 1,000.
And well over 1,000. I mean, much better. Much better.
Yeah, and had 12 walks.
He scored more runs.
He drove
in more runs.
Yeah, 3 more runs, but it is still more.
Yeah, he drew a zillion walks.
Yeah, he had 12 walks. I think he was the MVP.
Absolutely. Unlike the year when he was the MVP and it should have been a guy on another team.
Yeah, that too. So I'd have to say they blew this one just because a gaudy batting average of 418.
What a shock. A guy with a high batting average winning some kind of award. Well,
just because he had 41 hits. He led interleague play with 41 hits. But hey.
Right.
And then the top pitcher in the Pacific League was Ma Kun, Masahiro
yep.
Tanaka of the Eagles.
That was an interesting choice. Could have been Kikuchi, but I thought that was fairly obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
And Atsushi Nomi with the Tigers, again, fairly obvious. The Central League pitchers, get back with the dismemberment issue. Once they were pretty much cut up for fish bait by the Pacific League, there wasn't a lot of guys standing around who looked like they gave a ditch. And Toby was like the only guy who still had his arms attached to his body.
Yikes. Yeah, well, Mr. Nomi, who has at least one arm, that left one was working pretty well.
Was indeed.
3-1 he went in interleague play with 3 complete games.
Yep.
So that was really impressive. A 2.13 ERA. He was as dominant as anybody. Ma Kun went 4-0 with 36 strikeouts, and his ERA was 1.31. So he was the kind of dominant pitcher that major league teams imagine he will be for them next year.
Right.
Dun-dun-dun-dun. Now, stay tuned.
He's done quite well. I think now he's won 13, his last 13 decisions, stretching back to last August.
Uh-huh.
So he's been on quite of a run.
Yeah, he's getting ready to pack up and go to the States here. He wants to finish with a big kick.
As far as I know, I think he's got 17 or 18 consecutive. The last loss was the last time he didn't throw a quality start. In August of 2011.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's see how long he can stretch this. This is going to be interesting how long he can go without suffering a loss. He obviously needs some help from his team getting some runs to get the wins.
Mm.
And he's got to pitch fairly well, obviously, to keep the opponents off the board. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how far he can stretch this.
Mm.
All right.
Yep.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, our buddy, our correspondent is back. Mike in Tokorozawa sent us an MP3 question.
Welcome back, Mike.
Welcome back, bud. Here it is.
Hi, John and Jim from the Tokorozawa Lions Fan Club branch. We are very happy to see that Chris Carter is coming back. He's one of my son's favorite players. and mine too. Love his energy. Hopefully he is healthy. Now, we want to know, my son's favorite player is Okawari-kun, or Okawari-kun. I could never get the pronunciation right. We want to know when Mr. Nakamura is coming back. I mean, he is the home run king. There's a juiced up ball this season. Come on, we want to see him mash the ball at Cebu Dome. Anyway, if you guys can let us know when and if he's coming back this season, that would be great. My son would be very grateful. Thanks a lot. Great show as always. See ya.
Wow.
Yeah, Okawari.
Look into your crystal ball there, John. When's he coming back?
Well, I decided to go with something more reliable than a crystal ball. I went with the crystal internet.
Wow.
And I actually called the Yomiuri Shimbun reporter who's covering the Lions, the beat writer. And, you know, obviously they hadn't heard very much recently about him, so she had to go back and go through her notes. But she said, that he is still not able to do much yet. He's hitting off tee. He had the surgery, and the team executive said earlier this year that they're not going to rush him back under any circumstances because they don't want him to have a setback or to re-injure the same knee and have to sit out even more.
Right.
They're going to baby him. They're going to take it really easy on him. They at first thought he was going to come back mid-July or sometime around the All-Star break.
They were talking about right after the All-Star break.
But now they say it looks like it's going to be sometime in August, they think.
Okay.
He's been able to hit, like I said, off tees, but hasn't been able to run or take ground balls, so still waiting.
It's kind of like how he was when he was a rookie.
Yeah, couldn't run and couldn't feel ground ball. You're mean.
Yeah.
But
anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think this bodes well for a guy who's real heavy in the first place.
Right.
To not be running and not be out there moving and doing all the things that
are you saying this from personal experience, John?
In part, well, it runs in my family, I should say. So,
it walks in mine, running in my family. In fact, I didn't know what the word run meant until I was in junior high school. The coach said, like, don't you understand what I'm saying? I said, no.
You didn't know what it meant because you confused it with newspaper jargon, right? Running a story.
I had no idea. I thought, like, he painted something. It was dripping.
Oh, boy. So I don't know that this bodes well. I don't see that if he can get to where he's running, that he can get into shape and play and be effective this season. I'm kind of worried about that. But hopefully for the Lions fans and for their sake, the Chris Carter acquisition, perhaps they can settle down the lineup and Asamura can play first or Carter can play first and they can figure out what to do on the infield and they can get their team set. And I think that helps teams when everything is, when the defensive positions are set and they know what they're going to do. They know what their roles are. I think that helps. But right now there's so much confusion and fluctuation in the lineup and where guys are in the field that they can't get settled. I think that plays a role.
But you make that sound, again, you make this sound like this is not what the Lions do every year.
So hopefully they can get that part together and I think they're going to be okay. I think hopefully Carter will add some stability in that lineup and
well, I hope he does. I hope he, you know, if he can play regularly and produce at the level he produced last year. You know, he didn't really play much until the second half last year anyway. But if he could play regularly and play healthy, he could, let's say he was playing over his head last year.
Mm-hmm.
If he's healthy and he can play at his norm, it might be in that range, you know, a 300 hitter with some pop and a bunch of walks, you know, and some smart baseball. You know, that's got to help.
And he was clutch for him a little bit last year,
exactly.
So that was good.
He was exactly clutch. Yeah. I mean, that's the best word for him. No automatic transmission in Chris Carter.
All right. Now we have another question from Matt Vernon, and I believe he lives in Kansas City. So he says, hey, you guys, I just heard in the last day or two that Manny Ramirez has been released from his team in Taiwan and is looking to play in either MLB or NPB. My question is, which NPB team would most benefit from acquiring a healthy, productive Manny?
Now, the team that would benefit the most would be the team that would be able to sell him to the highest bidding major league team. Because here's his contract. You take it. Because there was a rumor going around, and I'll credit somebody at Kyoto with spreading it and trying to egg me on with it, that Manny Ramirez spent the weekend in Japan.
This past weekend.
Yep, and he is flying out of Japan tomorrow. I do not know if that is true, but I do know that the team he was. There was one story on Sunday and or Monday. I think there might have been two stories, but Sunday, Monday, the Marines are interested in Manny Ramirez. On Wednesday, he was released by his club in Taiwan. Friday, he leaves Taiwan for parts unknown, but that story with the Marines never developed. They said, well, you know, if we were to sign him, if, well, here's the big if, is they don't need him anymore.
Yeah, now that they've got Craig Brazil. Who's cheaper and who knows the league, you know, he knows the league. But the question, getting back to the question, geez.
Who would he help?
He wouldn't help any Central League team. So you can X out those six.
Okay, you guys, back of the bus. back of the Manny bus.
I started to think for a second that putting him in Yokohama Stadium, in that stadium, that little bandbox out there, with the threat of him hitting a home run every time he comes up, would be really good. But, you know, they have their issues anyway, defensively. And I don't think Manny Ramirez is going to help them, even if they try to hide him in left field. So that's not a good idea. So I X'd out all the Central League teams. I looked at the Marines. I thought they would be a good fit, but obviously they went with a cheaper solution in Craig Brazel and a guy, like I said, who knows a little bit more about Japanese baseball. You don't want to throw a guy in like a Chris Carter, who at least had 1 year with the Lions, and he knows enough about the pitchers that he doesn't, and he knows enough about the baseball that in the middle of a season, I mean, almost dead smack in the middle here, we're coming up on the middle, he's going to have some impact. I don't know that Manny would have that kind of impact. The SoftBank Hawks, yeah, they could probably use him. To be honest, I don't think Willie Mopena, I don't think Brian LaHare is doing all that well that the Hawks would say, well, no, we don't need a Manny Ramirez. But they're creeping up and they're coming back into the position where a lot of pundits believe that they would be. So I would have to say that they don't most need him. The Eagles, they could use him. Why not? I can't say no. The Sabre Lions,
who plays? Oh, Genji Akamanai.
Yeah, I mean they could use him. I think they could use him.
They could. Yes.
The Oryx Buffaloes, sure, they would become even slower as a team, more plodding team. They could use him. And the Nippon Ham Fighters, they could use him, I think. But they've got a guy who's really good, but they can put him in the field.
Abreu,
yeah. So the team that could most use him, I would have to say at this point in time, would be the Rakuten Eagles.
I think with the Eagles, I would say no. Basically, you got a team that has a very precarious new chemistry, as we talked about last week. Of course, you've got Andrew Jones in there as an anchor, and I don't know if Manny Ramirez is fine being the foreigner, and I shouldn't even speak about that. I don't know Manny Ramirez. We don't know each other. We've never spoke to each other. I don't want to anticipate what he would think and what he would say, which is a big business in the United States. So I can't really say what he would do. I would say that, yeah, it's a precarious balance in the sense that they got things in a sense of their winning spirit, as Hoshino said. It is positive right now. You know, why I don't want to be negative about Manny Ramirez because I don't know him, but if that's a question, maybe you say pass. We've got the guys we want. We've got the attitude we want. if I'm the Marines in that park with that fun, yeah, well, I guess we could. I was thinking about that, you know, before the Craig Brazell thing, because Josh Whitesell is out indefinitely.
Mm.
Josh Whitesell's a great guy. He's sort of like, and it's interesting having him and Craig Brazell on the same team if they're both healthy, because they're both the left-handed hitters, but they're different, so different players. I like them both. Anyway, yeah, Oryx, I guess he could help. It's not obvious. SoftBank, I'm surprised, actually didn't come out and say we want him, because that's what Son Masayoshi does every time anybody mentions they're willing to change teams. He says, I want that guy.
Yeah, the owner, yeah, he does that. Well, Manny hit, what, he hit 352 with 8 homers, 43 RBIs in 49 games in Taiwan. I don't know what that really means or how.
Well, 8 home runs is a big number in Taiwan, because the parks are like little airports. You know, they're large airports. They're not your little commuter airports, you know.
Mm.
You'd land some serious tonnage on those fields.
All right. Well, he was leading. You know, he was top three in all of those categories. So I don't know. The story I read said he missed his family in New York. He's 41. He's a 12-time All-Star. He played 19 years in the States. Blah blah blah. You know, you insert him in an Eagles lineup and as a DH, strictly a DH. I don't know. I think he can't hurt.
Well, they put him in the DH, and then they play Andrew Jones at first base, which is okay.
Yeah, not great, but okay, and he doesn't have to play every day, and I don't know. I don't see a bad thing about it. Yeah, he might be a negative influence. He might be a cancer. I probably wouldn't bring him in, but if somebody, you know, the question is, what team would most benefit from acquiring a healthy, productive Manny?
Okay, well, I would just, from an analytical point, I would say I'd go for a team in a real tough home run park. Because somebody who can really hit the ball far,
mm-hmm,
is going to help a team who plays in a tough home run park more than he hits, you know, because he hits them out of the stadium at Yokohama. They don't get extra runs for that.
Yeah. Well, then you're saying the Eagles, because it's not really a great home run park.
No, it isn't, or the Fighters, or the Hawks. The Hawks, yeah, mm-hmm, maybe.
All right. So you're not going to pick a team? I can't sit you.
I can't. Well, you know, he's not coming. So I find it hard to be motivated. So I apologize, Matt. It's a great question. And, you know, I wish Manny Ramirez well. He was very popular in Taiwan. He attracted a lot of fans, and he had a big attitude. And I mean a big attitude in the most, complimentary sense. You know, he was there. He was part of the product. He was part of the show. People loved to come to the park to see him play. And, it doesn't get a lot better than that. So I want to say, I'm kind of too bad you didn't come. It would have been fun covering him.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, thank you very much for the questions, Matt and Mike, the M&M combo there.
Wow. I thought that was Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris, but it shows you what I know.
Oh, well, times have changed, sir.
What?
Times have changed, young whippersnapper.
Hey, speak in my good ear next time, or I got to punch you out.
All right, please send your questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will address them on the show. You can also leave us a comment on the Facebook page.
Well, thank you very much, John, and to all the listeners. Look forward to speaking to you next week.
And listening to your MP3s.
Yes, please.
All right, guys, have a good week and enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.